الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا وقعت الواقعة ليس لوقعتها كاذبة خافضة رافعة إذا رجت الأرض رجا وبست الجبال بسا فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم أزواجا ثلاثة فأصحاب الميمنة ما أصحاب الميمنة وأصحاب المشأمة ما أصحاب المشأمة والسابقون السابقون أولئك المقربون في جنات النعيم ثلة من الأولين وقليل من الآخرين على سرر موضونة متكئين عليها متقابلين يطوف عليهم ولدان مخلدون بأكواب وأباريق وكأس من معين لا يصدعون عنها ولا ينزفون وفاكهة مما يتخيرون ولحم طير مما يشتهون وحور عين كأمثال اللؤلؤ المكنون جزاء بما كانوا يعملون لا يسمعون فيها لغوا ولا تأثيما إلا قيلا سلاما سلاما وأصحاب اليمين ما أصحاب اليمين في سدر مخضود وطلح منضود وظل ممدود وماء مسكوب وفاكهة كثيرة لا مقطوعة ولا ممنوعة وفرش مرفوعة إنا أنشأناهن إنشاء فجعلناهن أبكارا عربا أترابا لأصحاب اليمين ثلة من الأولين وثلة من الآخرين وأصحاب الشمال ما أصحاب الشمال في سموم وحميم وظل من يحموم لا بارد ولا كريم إنهم كانوا قبل ذلك مترفين وكانوا يصرون على الحنث العظيم وكانوا يقولون أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئنا لمبعوثون أو آباؤنا الأولون قل إن إن الأولين وال
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, today as I speak to you, we Muslims and a huge part of the world's population, unfortunately, we were forced to make ourselves stomach a video in which we watched a defenseless man, a man who was handcuffed, a man who was begging for his life, and a man who was outnumbered, surrounded by video cameras and people protesting and begging for his life, or at least for him to be allowed to have water, or at least the knee to be taken off of his neck. Instead, they strangled the man on television and then callously threw his body into the ambulance. Now, I think you and I realize, at least this is true for us here in America, if someone had strangled a dog in that way, people would be up in arms. But here, unfortunately, we saw that up until the last minute, the police officers were walking around free as a bird. So you and I, we know how it works as civilians here in America, that if we were caught on camera, strangling somebody, video evidence, people watching, and they decided to hold an investigation, we would be arrested, and we would be in cuffs, and then they would investigate. But here, after 4 days of rioting, multiple city protests, then arrogantly, the attorney general comes out and says that he's been charged with third degree murder and manslaughter. And you and I know how that works, you know, meaning this isn't the first case of you and I seeing this kind of brutality and then the person walks afterwards and gets paid in the meantime. I'll give you a couple of more examples because then after that I want to talk about what I want to share today. So you remember Eric Gardner, brothers and sisters, you remember how they said he was selling cigarettes? I believe he had 100 cigarettes on him. And he was strangled by police officers in front of everyone. These people had reputations of violence towards minorities and mistreatment of different individuals. The man kept his job for 5 years. The man who recorded the incident, he's still serving his time in jail, though. Or you remember that case in Minnesota where there was a man who was stopped and in the car was also a woman and her child. He volunteered to the police. It wasn't his responsibility. He volunteered that he also had a firearm. The police, there's two police officers. He was not reaching for his firearm. This was proven. He was not reaching for his firearm. Didn't, yet he was shot 7 times. And it didn't matter that there was a child in the car. That man also kept earning his wages until the case was finally heard and then he was let go. The other case that we all remember was, because it's so deep here in this country, Trayvon Martin, if we remember that he had Skittles in his hands and he was coming from a 7-Eleven and he had Skittles in his pockets. Someone who wasn't a police officer decided that he should be responsible, that he was suspicious. He killed him, and of course he was exonerated, as we know. So what happens is, I want to talk a little bit about the idea of what institutionalized racism is, and then what our responsibility is as believers. people who are living in this country or living abroad, other countries. And you and I see all of these incidents, and we don't want to see the blood of the innocent go in vain. We want to use these things to break the curse, to end the cycle, and to hasten the reappearance of our master. So the institutionalized racism here in America is a little deeper than maybe people have experienced in other places. Someone could calmly be taking, well, you could be bird watching in a park. And when you're bird watching in a park, the other person breaks the law. And then they know that if they say an African-American male is threatening me, that at the very least you will get a severe beating. And you could quite possibly get killed. And then deliberately, frantically call the police claiming that they are threatened. Or it could be, as we saw the case in Georgia, where you're just jogging and you get killed. Or somebody might just consider themselves a police, if you want to follow these cases. Someone went to a gated community, is working as a truck driver. The thing is, now these things are being recorded, right? So we see what people are living. Working as a truck driver. Deliver your responsibility. Try to leave, and somebody could block you in. And again, no consequences. People are above the law. So the 13th Amendment, as we know, didn't end racism. It didn't end in the 1960s. It didn't end when there was a black president. Actually, according to some studies, it got worse then. So I just want to give, again, because some of us, we might not be living this, but if we understand how huge the problem is, it'll make us yearn for the coming of the imam even more. And then we have to talk, of course, about solutions. Another time we need to talk about where this would apply to us and make sure that we are not guilty of any sort of thing. So with institutionalized racism, it's like when this police officer, he may get off, right? It goes back to the laws and the legislation of the taghut. So it's there in the loans that you try to apply for, the housing that you try to get, education and learning opportunities. For instance, they've done studies. If people are presented, they go to the university with identical grades and accomplishments, then the acceptance is vastly different. The medical treatment that you receive if you go to a hospital, they've done studies on these things. Much more likely the African Americans to be suspended from school, so before they even make it to the university. If they, here in America, and this is not, again, we're going to be talking about the concept of the taghut, so this isn't a discussion about just kind of becoming controlled opposition and just saying, you know, white supremacy, this kind of thing. We're going to talk about this, inshallah, from the roots. But as an example, in America, white people are more likely to use drugs, but they're less likely to go to jail. And the black people are more likely to be convicted. And if they're convicted for the same sentence, they serve longer. But again, these are just so many examples. Just an idea that for us, you and I, because we have a responsibility of spreading Islam, we have to know and make sure that we're educated and aware of what's actually going on here. Once, when Malcolm X was going to address an issue, the issue of police brutality, this is in Los Angeles. An incident happened outside of one of their mosques or temples. So he is going to address this issue. And then he said this. He said that we've got to go to the root. We've got to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. We can't just be superficial. We can't just go over and become part of the controlled opposition. We have to go and talk about what the real problem is and what real, inshallah, solutions are. One of the things that you and I want to focus on when we explain this issue to others, and I'm glad to see that Muslims up across the board are saying something, coming out, remembering that responsibility that the Ahlul Bayt have placed on our shoulders, where we must side with the oppressed, and we must stand against the oppressor. So that's beautiful to see, but we can take it a step further by looking at the root cause of these things. Racial discrimination and bigotry, mistreating people in this kind of a savage and inhumane way, they're all fruit, some of the evil fruit of the wilaya of the non-divine leader. When you have rulership of the non-divine leader, some of the people who wanted to protest before when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling and some of the athletes refused to join him. Others did, some didn't. And some of them pointed out the fact that according to the law, they were okay. The law of the Tawgut allows a man to go over, and we'll see. I mean, we're going to all watch, us and the whole world will watch the situation. But the other police officers who stood there callously, and I mean, you've seen the videos where people are begging, pleading, shouting. The people are fearful of the law enforcement here. And the others weren't white, by the way. Some of them weren't. The Asian American. What happens is this goes back to the wilayah of the Taghut, and then after that we need to talk a little bit about the solution, and on another time we need to talk about sometimes if this disease exists amongst us as Muslims as well. And if we want to get rid of the problem, is it enough for us to condemn this without going to the root cause and then also to look inward? And I'm going to talk a little bit about that looking inward, inshallah, a little bit later. But the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt is this. The Imam says this, from Imam Sadiq, he says, "Nahnu aslul khair." We, Ahlul Bayt, the wilaya of God, is the root of all goodness. Wa furu'u ta'atullah. The branches are the obedience of Allah. Wa aduwuna, our enemy, the wilaya of the non-divine leader. Aslu shar is the root of all wickedness. Wa furu'uhu ma'siyatullah. The branches are those other sins in the ma'siyah, the ma'asi that you and I see. Why is this so important? If you and I only talk about certain parts of Islam, or even in this case, only condemn the branches, but don't go to the root, then that's not enough, as Malcolm X said. The reality is that what we believe is that Allah's vicegerent is supposed to rule the earth. This is mankind's solution. And mankind needs to come to this. As long as this continues, there'll be another Tawgut, another Fir'aun, another evil leader, no matter what his race. I'll give you an example. This is from the Quran now. So these Fara'ina, like Fir'aun, Fara'ina, they've existed throughout time and the techniques are the same. This is one from Surah Qasas, brothers and sisters, verse number 4. Allah says this about Fir'aun, who's from Egypt. So it doesn't matter if you're from the African continent, if you're from America, if you're Native American. And until we realize this, we can't resolve this. As long as we keep pointing the finger at one particular race without looking and saying, well, what brings this about? Why would a human being consider this okay to do to another human being? And then, even if we tackle it over here, what about the rest of the world? What about Venezuela, right? And we need to talk about Palestine, all the rest of the world, this is still happening. And we, as people, citizens of this country, should be up in arms about all oppression. We need to talk about that when we come to the solutions. Right now, let's look at the system of Fir'aun and what it does. So the system of Fir'aun, this one you can just apply it to the president. Right? Inna Fir'aun ala fil ard. Truly, Pharaoh behaved arrogantly in the land. Wa ja'ala ahlaha shi'a. And he made the people of the land up into factions. يَسْتَضْعِفُ طَائِفَةً He weakened one group منهم طَائِفَةً منهم يُذَبِّحُ أَبْنَاءَهُمْ He would slaughter their sons وَيَسْتَحْيِي نِسَاءَهُمْ And he would keep their women alive. He would spare their women. So you see in the verses of the Quran where Pharaoh introduces xenophobia, where he talks about the threat of Musa and his brother and that message that they want to take away your land, your heritage, your noble way. And then you and I just apply it to these common techniques. I have to go over this quickly because there's a lot in each one of these, but then let's talk a little bit, inshallah, about the solution. The idea is, brothers and sisters, if we want to break the circle, then you and I, it's not enough to repeat things like, for instance, Black Lives Matter. And you might say, well, why of all times would you mention this up? But there's a concept called controlled opposition. So, brothers and sisters who are familiar with me or my talks, you're aware of these concepts, but bear with me, let me explain this again. Black Lives Matter, that group, was founded by three women. Those three women, two of them, identify as queer activists. They're all promoting that homosexual agenda, but they identify in this way. They're receiving money from George Soros. Who is George Soros? The same person who runs the Keller Revolutions, the same person who tried to overthrow the Islamic Republic. So that's where they get their money. So why would that organization, which promotes non-divine values, even if they're standing for the right thing, why would I, as a Muslim, stand behind them and then chant their slogans? There's a real problem. The problem is non-divine rulership. The problem is when we, as the people, and this is the next part I need to talk about. One part of it is Pharaoh and the policies that they have. Another one is the culture of the common man and where we may lie guilty if we are not practicing all of Islam or not preaching all of Islam. What happens is the Quran explains to us, and this is part of the problem, this is how this and a painful event like this happens. Obedience to the taghut is a type of shirk according to Quran. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was asked about a verse in the Quran, Surah 9, verse number 31, where it says in the Quran, اتخذوا أحبارهم ورحبانهم أربابا من دون الله. They took their scholars and their monks as lords other than Allah. So the Imam was asked, what does this mean? They would take scholars and monks and now think about leaders and everyone else. He said the reality of Tawheed, he explained the reality of Tawheed. They performed a different type of shirk that's being practiced on a vast level. They were at fault. The people were at fault. This allowed the Tawagheed to rule. It's not just taking like Fir'aun, the Ablah, the one who existed at that time, to say that Ana Rabbukumul A'la. Most of them, the smarter ones, won't say Ana Rabbukumul A'la, but they still act as God, mini gods. How? Because you're obeying them in disobedience of Allah. The Imam says this, Ama wallah, know this by God, Ma da'awhum ila ibadati anfusihim. These people, those scholars and monks, didn't call them to worship them. They didn't say Ana Rabbukumul A'la. وَلَوْ دَعَوْهُمْ إِلَىٰ عِبَادَةِ أَنفُسِهِمْ مَا أَجَابُوهُمْ. And if they called them to worship themselves in that direct fashion, to take them as deities, then they wouldn't have answered them. What did that happen though? وَلَكِنْ أَحَلُّوا لَهُمْ حَرَامًا. They made haram halal for them. Legislation, as I mentioned, the legislation that allows this. وَحَرَّمُوا عَلَيْهِمْ حَرَامًا. And they made haram be halal for them. So, فَعَبَدُوهُمْ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَشْعُرُونَ. They ended up worshiping them from where they did not know. They were at fault. People can grasp the concept that only Allah is to be obeyed. And the world, people of the world, if they want to come out of this, if they want a savior, at least you and I have to be honest with them and not just join them in only condemning what's wrong, but talk about the solution. The solution is when we go back to not taking one another as lords, and rather, when we introduce all of Islam, you and I also need to make sure something else happens. We can't just get upset for one issue, it's all issues. So we said that one of the teachings in Islam is that we defend the oppressed. And let's listen to this beautiful hadith of our Prophet where he tells us this. مَنْ سَمِعَ رَجُلًا. Whoever hears a man, يُنَادِي يَا لِلْمُسْلِمِينَ, calling out to the Muslims for help, فَلَمْ يُجِبْهُ, and doesn't answer, فَلَيْسَ بِمُسْلِمٍ. فَلَيْسَ بِمُسْلِمٍ. This person isn't a Muslim. Whether that person be here, being handcuffed, surrounded, strangled like an animal, or overseas, the Palestinians, or Latin America. We're all watching what's happening in Venezuela right now. Why aren't people up in arms? How can it be? You can impose sanctions on a sovereign nation. You can declare their president is guilty that you don't recognize their president. You can impose another president. You can run commandos into that country to overthrow that president, then decide that they be blockaded, and then just watch the people suffer under the coronavirus. But you see, these teachings of Islam have been embodied in the Islamic Republic, so you saw the tankers come one after another. Because as Imam Ali teaches us, people are either of two types. These are the teachings of Islam, what we're sharing to the world. فَإِنَّ his letter to Malik Ashtar. فَإِنَّهُمْ سِنْفَانِ people are of two types. إِمَّا أَخٌ لَكَ فِي الدِّينِ either they're your brother in religion. وَإِمَّا نَذِيرٌ لَكَ فِي الْخَلْقِ or they are like you in creation. So how far do we have to awaken this sense of standing up against oppression, all oppression, implementing all of Islam, including social and political laws in Islam, not only where the government allows us to speak, but to raise our voices and say that other areas, like the area of Israel, aren't okay. I want to mention a little bit about that. Because, I don't know, sometimes I get surprised that some Muslims get very, very upset, for instance, about what's happening to the Muslims in China, which is, of course, you're upset with every issue, right? Every particular issue. Nobody should be oppressed. But I want to mention a little bit of something about why you and I were a little hesitant. We all know Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pompeo is now the Secretary of State, but he explains, and there's a video probably many of us either have seen it or we will see it, where he explains that as the head, he says, I was the CIA director, and we would cheat, we would lie, we would steal. There aren't any rules. Again, we're above the law. Cheat, lie, and steal. We may have heard recently where he said, in his latest visit to Israel, that if the ICC, the International Criminal Court, if they investigate Israel, there's going to be consequences. If they investigate Israel, there'll be consequences. You also know that the police departments here in the U.S., including the one in Minnesota, many of these police departments, including the one in Minnesota, they're trained by the Israelis. Either the Israelis travel here or the police department, members of the police department travel over there. They're doing the same wicked acts that they've been doing for 70 years to the power. They've been trained. He was saying over there in the video, he said, we've been trained. We had memo. We were taught how to do. There were instructions on how to cheat, lie, and steal. So this man, when he goes over and Mike Pompeo, calls out Iran and says, how come Iran is not standing with the people in China? Then it just, well, Mike Pompeo, what do you care about? You cheat, lie, and steal. If somebody investigates, so now you accepted the Lord? Found Jesus? How would you be? So with us, you and I, we have to get this in our minds that defense of the press wherever they are. Share this. I remember there's a video, inshallah, one day it can be translated, where Shahid Qasim Soleimani is reciting some poetry. And in this poetry, he's reciting a poem that was recited in the presence of the leader. Some beautiful lines in the poetry. And what happens is it helps us get an idea of what the Islamic stance is on, why we would feel that it's necessary, even if it's happening in Venezuela, or it's happening in Palestine, or it's anywhere in the world, or here, why we feel so serious about these things. Some of the lines of poetry were this, and you'll have to forgive my Farsi. He says this, Ku bashi, sail ya baran, che farqi mikonat. You have to be a mountain. If you're a mountain, then what difference does it make? Shefarqi mikonat, what difference does it make? Whether it's rain or a flood. The poem continues. One part of it is this. He says, Marzha sahme zaminan, watu sahme asaman. These borders, they're part of this world, the zamin. He says, but you belong to the sky. Then he says this, آسمان شام یا ایران چه فرقی می کند؟ The sky of Syria or Iran, what difference does it make? He continues. He says this, مرز ما عشق است. هر جا اوس آنجا خاک ماست. Our border is love. Wherever he is, that's our land. سامرا، غزه، حلب، تهران چه فرقی می کند؟ What difference does it make if it's Samarra, if it's Gaza, if it's Aleppo, if it's Tehran? So the Islamic take, brothers and sisters, the idea that it doesn't matter. Dhulm is unacceptable. No one's above the law. And this is the part, this is another discussion, where sometimes amongst Muslims, and this is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about, talking about, discussing over the month of Ramadan, how many times Muslims, male or female, black or white, married or unmarried, children or parents, feel it's okay and they're above the law when it comes to Allah's laws. They can mistreat another person and not feel guilt. Not come to the defense of a person. Watch that person be madloom and it's okay. That's not acceptable. What happens is, you and I, one of our responsibilities is to learn how to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar in the right way, which we spend a lot of time talking about, the idea of building friendships, the idea of taking our time, the idea of speaking when we should, waiting until it's appropriate, but speaking, brothers and sisters, not just tolerating, saying, not just existing, not just being here in this country, but I can't even express my views. Some of you are very talented. You have your own way of going over and sharing these views of Islam with the world and breaking the curse so the blood of this poor man and so many before him doesn't go in vain. What happens is, you and I, though, there's another condition when it comes to divine leadership, and that's something for you and I to work on, and that is the idea of overcoming our own Ismail. We want the imam to return. The way that it works is that the people have to want it. So one part of it would be spreading the teachings of Islam so people aren't enemies of Islam and they know what they're getting if Islam arrives. But the other one are those people who believe so much in the cause, they'll sacrifice themselves and their well-being to make sure that it happens. Otherwise, there were people, and God protect us from being like these people, who almost made it to Karbala. You and I, we've been doing this, practicing this for how many years now? We have Muharram, getting ourselves ready. Are we really ready? Are we even talking about what it takes to be ready? Sacrificing our Ismail and being ready to go. Teremah is a person who is discussed in our books of history. Teremah was a poet. Teremah was someone who passed the test of Amir al-Mu'mineen, was a veteran. He actually was sent to negotiate with Muawiyah, and you should see how he addressed Muawiyah, how brave this man was. But what happens is sometimes people have attachments, and their attachments aren't in line with what Allah wants, even if they're good religious attachments. So let's listen to the story of Teremah. Teremah comes out and he comes to meet Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein now is close to Kufa. He's there where Hur meets him, with 1,000 soldiers. They pass salams, they talk. The Imam asks them about Kufa. He says, Kufa's full of soldiers. Don't go to Kufa. Kufa's dangerous. I just came from Kufa. The Imam explains that he's got to. He said, but look, come with me. He said, I can guarantee, if you come with me, I've got people. I can guarantee you 20,000 people who will defend you. The Imam explains that, look, I've got to do what I've got to do. And then Teremah's test comes. Teremma said that, Imam, if you give me permission, I've got a little bit of food and supplies that I want to take to my wife and kids, and I'll be back. And the Imam told Teremma, he said, be quick. Teremma went, he gave the things to his family, he came back, it was all over. He missed his chance at Karbala. The concept of shahada, being so upset about these things, so determined not to let it happen, that I will be part of the solution and not the problem. There was a line from that poetry that if you see the video, you'll see that it broke the leader's heart. And when Qasim Soleimani is reciting the line of that poet, it broke his heart also. Some of the lines were this, and of course they're more beautiful in the Farsi. Har kera sub shahadat niz sham marg hast. Whoever doesn't become a martyr in the morning, in the evening, they will die. Nobody's going to be here forever. But then comes the real line. Bi shahadat marg ba khusran che farqi mikonat. If we're not going to become shaheed, then what's the difference between death and complete failure? In order to have a divine system come in place, a person has to be so determined when they see these kinds of situations that they'll do what it takes. They'll spread the message. They'll ready themselves and their families for the idea that freedom from tawagheed doesn't come just by advising them or admonishing them. One of our shuhada, Shaheed Mahdi Zainuddin, he was proposing to his wife. So she says the second time he proposed to me. So normally people go over, they want to win the person up. The second time he proposed to her, and they're meeting now face to face, he told her a little bit about himself, and he said this, if the war ends and I don't become Shaheed, wherever there is a battle between haqq and batil, wherever there's a battle between truth and falsehood, I will go there. It doesn't make any difference whether it be Iran or anywhere else in the world. I consider this taklif for myself. So this kind of way of introducing in Islam where one, we know the real culprit, the taghut. We know that the people have a role, the mustad'afin have a role in the rule of the tawaghut. They think it's okay. They're part of the problem. They have to say, La ilaha illallah in the real sense. They have to know that it's shirk to obey the tawaghut and disobedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They have to realize that. The ayat of the Quran. The Quran says this. Surah 6, verse number 121. Inna shayateen, truly the shayateen, layuhuna ila awliyaihim, they inspire their awliya, liyujadilukum, that they dispute with you. Now comes the kicker. Wa in ata'tumuhum, and if you obey them in disobedience of Allah, innakum la mushrikun, you're mushrikeen. Shirk. So what happens is we have to prepare ourselves and our families once we know these realities to do our responsibilities, to protest and to connect the dots and explain and tell people why this is wrong and ready ourselves for the real challenge to be kind of like Zuhair and his wife. Remember the story of Zuhair and his wife, how he got that message from Imam Hussein and he hesitated and his wife said, Subhanallah, the son of Zahra sends you a message and you're not going to go? And Zuhair went over. And it doesn't tell us, the books of history, what transpired between him and the Imam. But when he came back, his face was bright. And then he told his wife, he said that I want nothing but good for you. I want you to go with your family. This is what they say his wife said. فَقَامَتْ إِلَيْهِ The same wife who had encouraged him. She stood and walked towards him. She embraced him. She said her goodbyes to him. And she told him this. وَقَالَتْ خَارَ اللَّهُ لَكَ Allah has chosen well for you. She said, I have one request. As'aluka an tuzkirani fil qiyama 'inda jadd al-Husayn. I want you to remember me in front of the grandfather of Imam Hussein. She was encouraging him, as opposed to those families that discourage us from being brave, from doing our responsibility, from speaking out, from saying and doing what our responsibility is. So brothers and sisters, this was just a little bit of course, the response, and it needs to be discussed further. It's a terrible atrocity. We, of course, as believers, we feel this pain, and inshallah, with the coming of the Imam and us doing our responsibilities, it won't go in vain. We ask Allah to accept what was said and heard in His way. May Allah forgive all of us, all of our faults, and inshallah, hasten the return of our Master. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا وقعت الواقعة ليس لوقعتها كاذبة خافضة رافعة إذا رجت الأرض رجا وبست الجبال بسا فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم